You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and Seattle Sports app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like you're asking me a question.
And the ether. We're out there. I got lots of questions for you guys. I'm going to have to ask you guys about the All-Star game. I did not get to see very much of it. I was out last night, had a pre-scheduled concert, which we bought tickets for, I don't know, like a year ago, months ago, certainly, before I realized that it would be the All-Star game and that Julio would be something that I would want to watch. And I got home late, so I didn't get to DVR or anything. But first of all, great night at Chateau St. Michel.
So we're going to ask you, how'd the show go?
Yes, Black Crowes were fantastic. Chris Robinson sounds great. Shout out to the couple standing directly between me and the stage that danced and made out and groped each other for a full hour and 40 minutes. Oh, not
wow,
easy
wow.
to do.
Wow.
He looked a lot like Crispin Glover. I don't know what she looked like necessarily, but if you just imagine the dad in Back to the Future, this dancing, kind of the same thing. Like, he had the whole Crispin Glover thing going on, plus a good hour and 40 minutes of making out and groping.
Gross.
What's your limit for amount of time spent at a public concert dancing, groping, and making out?
Oh, that's a solid zero for me, Bob.
There's no excuse for that much PDA ever.
It's not going to happen.
What is the most amount of PDA that's appropriate at a concert like that?
I'm going to go ahead and say zero.
Zero.
Go ahead and say just
holding hands. Dancing together? Yeah. I mean, like, there's got to be some.
You can give each other a kiss or two, but yeah, making out? No.
Legitimately.
What are you, 16?
They were legit. No. No, reverse those numbers, and I think you've got it a little bit more accurate. Put the six before the one.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, too. Is that album that you went to see is how old?
Shake Your Moneymaker? Came out in 1990.
Okay.
So that did lead to some curiosity of how old the crowd would be.
I was going
to
ask, how old is the lead singer?
Chris Robinson? I don't know, but he sounded great.
Wow. All right.
It's got to be a little older than me because I was, 12 when that came out. So
55.
Yeah, he sounds awesome, man. Seriously, there are some people in their 50s. Like, I'm going to go see Vince Neil here in a few weeks when the big show comes to the stadium tour, comes to T-Mobile. He will not sound that good.
That's true.
Like, he can barely sing. Brett Michaels is going to be at that tour. He can barely sing. But Joe Elliott of Def Leppard still sounds great. And so does Chris Robinson. So it was awesome last night and great venue and beautiful spot. Shout out to a few people who said hello, which was very nice. But I missed the All-Star game. So what did I miss? What was the best part?
My favorite part, and I saw a lot of hate for it, was all the mic'd up players on the field in play, especially the pitchers. I thought that was fascinating, including a catcher.
I saw a lot of love for it.
Oh, what? I saw a few people who were like, why are we really doing this?
What are they possibly upset about?
Just maybe that it was distracting to them or something, or maybe it felt
during
on,
the All-Star game?
Not
they
really
needed
game.
Like full concentration.
That's what I said. I was
for
like,
the
could,
All-Star game?
How could anybody not like this?
No, I saw a lot of people loving like the behind the scenes look at how pitchers and catchers kind of communicate. I mean, obviously they're talking to each other a little more than they normally would be normally,
right.
But just getting some insight on
how
their brains work through that.
How difficult that must be too.
Yeah. I watched a little of it. So before I left for the show, I woke up and at 5:45 and watched a few minutes once I woke up and I saw some of Alek Manoah mic'd up. I thought that was great. First of all, he's got a little bit of personality to him, which makes it kind of fun. But the whole process.
You sure don't have to shake too often with Alejandro there, do you?
No, he's pretty good. Yeah. That ball. Didn't feel right.
You know right away, huh?
What do you think Kirky calls here? I think he calls a front hip sinker. We'll see how close I am. All right, I was wrong. Oh, there it is. Second option. Here we go. There's two.
He caught it.
Pretty, pretty good. Two up, two down, and a couple K's.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And just, I mean, you have to kind of be watching it in order to really immerse yourself in the back and forth. But, hey, I'm going to go upstairs with another heater. Hey, let's go back door with a slider. He's going to try to swing over it.
Mm-hmm.
That was with, I think it was Jock Peterson up. And he said, all right, look, I'm going to throw a front door slider, if I'm not mistaken, try to get him to swing over it. And then he did. Like it wasn't a strikeout. It was a foul ball. But because he swung over the top, I mean, you could really see the exact philosophy and strategy more than anything else of what they were trying to accomplish to get a player out. What's not to like?
I have no idea. It was fantastic. Wow. As a former player, I loved it. And when he's like, Smoltz, what do you want me to throw here? It's like, oh, how about a little back foot slider? He's like, oh, you're right. Sexy. I love it. And it beans him and just hits him in the front foot.
I agree. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, I would make the argument that if baseball is looking to innovate in any way, this should be number one on their list. And I understand the challenges of it because the other side could be listening and, you know, understanding what it is they're doing. There's so much risk involved with it. You'd have to find a way to mitigate it. But, you know, I have this sort of built into need to know today. For everybody who complains about baseball, I was listening yesterday to the ESPN morning show, right? To, what is it, Max and Jay Will and
Keyshawn,
which is a good show. And they do a great job during NFL season. They do a great job talking basketball. And I know Max says that baseball is his favorite sport. I don't think they're a great baseball show, and I say that with respect. And when I hear guys who aren't huge baseball fans, huge baseball people, they always want to drastically change baseball to make it more like the sports that they like better. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. You can like that. I don't believe that's the best way to improve baseball. And I'm not saying baseball doesn't need to be improved. I think baseball could be better. I love the sport. It will always be a passion of mine. But it could be better. It could have more action. There were 20 pitchers in last night's game. How many of them gave up runs? Two. I mean, pitching in baseball right now is so ridiculously dominant. They've got to come up with a way to inject more offense and not just more home runs, more excitement, more action into the game. I have no doubt about that. But tricks like, oh, let's have a home run derby in the seventh inning. Let's throw a runner on second base. Let's play with eight guys. I mean, like, these things are not, that's not baseball. And the beauty of baseball is that it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to teach Cecily right now, she's 8 years old, how to play baseball. And try to teach her the rules. I can't explain the rules very well, even though I feel like I know them cold. Well, no, in this situation, actually, you're not forced. Well, because there's not a man on first. Yeah, but, well, yeah, with two strikes, it's a bunt, and then then you're out. Right. But a foul ball's not an out. Like, it's exhausting.
It's the beauty of the games. It changes with every pitch.
But that's what makes it great, and that it requires a tremendous amount of concentration. You're right. It's constantly in motion and changing, even when it seems as if not very much is happening. It is a cerebral game, and I love baseball for that. That being said, I think it's hard for people to truly understand how great the sport is. I've often recommended the book Hardball, I think it's called, by what's his name? The old catcher from the A's. I'll think of it in a moment. Jason Kendall. And it's great. It is truly one of the best books on sports I've ever read. I could not recommend it more because he takes you so deep inside the game of what's really going on. And anytime baseball mics up its players during a game, you get that opportunity. Yeah, it's cool in football when you hear the yelling and the cheering and the wowing and the, you know, daps and the what's going on in the huddle. That's great. I got no problems with that. Trash talk, etc. But hearing baseball players and certainly pitchers talk through their sequencing, that was amazing. I'll take that every day.
Yeah, we had one downer on the text line that was like, they're not really calling what they would. Well, yeah, it's the All-Star game.
Right.
We understand that it's not a high-leverage situation, and they're not even playing with their usual teammate. It's still interesting to hear how they think.
But what if you could find a way to get them to actually do that during games? That would be tremendous.
Well, that's kind of what you get weeks after with the mic'd-up NFL stuff.
Right,
They're not faking it.
Right.
So yeah. if you had some of that quarterback play in real time, you got to hear three or four plays.
I think as a player, you would say, like, don't do that to me in the game.
And that's the problem, right? And we've seen a little of it. I think it was Alex Verdugo who was mic'd up during a game. We've seen a little of it during games.
Joey Votto did it beginning of the season.
But gosh, the more baseball could do with that to help understand and explain and really see how much is going on, even when it doesn't seem like anything is happening, I think that would be, I don't know, tremendous for me anyway.
And David Ortiz, when he ran through the dugout and did like a 5-second interview with every player, it's like, right, only he can do that, but that was great.
Asked if he could get in the game.
Yeah. You think he could go in there and hit?
I bet you he could take a few hacks.
I don't know. None of the current All-Stars were able to hit any of the pitching. You think he could have done any better?
Fair point.
Maybe he could have. I don't know. He certainly rises to the occasion. He's shown that enough in his career. All right. Come right back here. We'll give you everything you need to know, including the future for three different quarterbacks. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, in case you were wondering, pitching in baseball, pretty spectacular. Certainly on display once again last night in the All-Star game. 20 total pitchers in the game, and a grand total of two of them gave up runs. An amazing display. American League ends up winning 3-2. That makes nine consecutive All-Star games won by the AL. I wonder if that'll start to even out now that the DH is universal and the difference between the leagues may dry up a little bit. As for the Mariners representatives, wasn't much to write home about. Julio 0-for-2, France 0-for-1 with a strikeout, but certainly cool to have Julio mic'd up during the game.
Is this the year, Julio, that the Mariners make it back to the postseason?
For sure. I feel like that's all we are shooting for. That's all we are working for. And we're writing something cool right now, and I feel like everybody... he's on the same page about that. Everybody's pulling towards the same direction. So I think it's going to be pretty exciting at the end of the year.
First of all, he's awesome. Second of all, I really enjoy and appreciate that Mariners players are embracing the goal. It's none of this, well, we're not talking about that. We're just trying to play one game at a time. They are doing that. But I like that they've embraced the goal. They understand what the job is. They understand the assignment, right? Make the playoffs, guys. That's what you're being paid to do. That's what the expectation is. And then we're going to start looking beyond that because eventually the goal is to win a World Series. I like it. I appreciate it. Meanwhile, when I hear non-baseball fans talk about ways to improve the game, it always seems to come back to things like home run derbies or ways to shorten the game. The beauty of baseball is in the complication. The All-Star game, I thought, did a fantastic job of showing that side to all fans. So more mic'd up players, please. Fewer ghost runners on second base. Meanwhile, it does sound as if some rule changes are coming. Rob Manfred saying last night he expects a pitch clock, larger bases, and an end to the shift by next season, with more research, Justin, still to be done on robo-umps.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, it's not every year the talk of the All-Star break is all about one of the game's best young players who could be dealt at the age of 23, but with Scott Boras looking on from behind the plate yesterday, everybody wondering about the future of Juan Soto here in Seattle. Should be a legitimate conversation. They're one of the teams with enough capital to make a deal with the Nationals. So what would it take? Well, that question's produced a wide range of answers and speculation. Everything from half your team to a few big-name prospects. Should the Mariners be interested? Yeah, of course. We're talking about one of the best in the game, and he's more likely to get better than he is to drop off based on his age of 23. So when you're being compared to Ted Williams and Babe Ruth, and it's not a huge exaggeration, that's definitely something worth exploring. Ryan Divish with more yesterday with Wyman and Bob.
If you were to trade for Juan Soto now, you have him for this postseason run, next year, and the year after. That's 2.5 years, okay? That's 2.5 years going after the postseason where you go, you bat Julio leadoff, you bat Juan Soto second, and you bat Ty France third. You get Juan Soto, it changes the whole perception of the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's impossible to answer whether or not they should do it without knowing what the ask is, but I'd sure like them to be trying very hard. Pairing him with Julio would not only be awesome, yeah, it would change the image of this team and make it a better destination for other talented players in free agency.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, a couple of NFL notes as we sit and wait for training camp to begin, not too far away. Pro Football Talk reporting yesterday the Browns are privately bracing for an 8-game suspension of Deshaun Watson. Now, in my opinion, that would be meager. An 8-game suspension would be meager. That's not even half of a season now that we're at 17 games. The bar's been set, guys, by Major League Baseball and their 2-year suspension of Trevor Bauer. 8 games at that point after that would be paltry. The article also notes that Cam Newton may be an option in Cleveland, either to back up or in place of Jacoby Brissett. If so, That would remove another possible landing spot for Jimmy Garoppolo. Ian Rappaport reporting yesterday that he'll be fully cleared by the middle of August, so we'll see what happens there. I also love this. This was on Bump and Stacey yesterday. Cardinals writer Josh Weinfuss from ESPN talking about the Cards.
I mean, if they bought him out for the third straight year, this isn't a fluke. This is a trend at this point. I think at that point, the organization needs to look at why is this happening, and that all comes back to the head coach. So if that happens, we might see some changes, but I don't know if this roster can handle the best of the best of the league. And like you said, those first three games, that's a gauntlet right there. And I think that could set the pace early on. I mean, obviously DeAndre Hopkins changes everything, but at least for the first 6 weeks, those three games could kind of set the temperature for what we're going to see out of the Cardinals this year.
Yeah, I thought they should have fired him last year. I don't even know why they waited. Yeah, here's my prediction. He'll be fired by the end of this year. That's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour, and my apologies. Ryan Divish was on with Bump and Stacey.
Oh, okay,
not
good.
Wyman and Bob. Good. Bump and Stacey get all the good interviews.
Well, I was listening yesterday. Rick Riz was in the building recording some commercials. Whoa. So he just popped in and did the show with Wyman at the beginning.
What?
Yeah. Just sat in the studio.
Was he giggling?
He did a couple giggles. I could hardly hear. I was pulling out of the grocery store parking lot when he jumped in.
Did you guys stick around for the free ice cream yesterday?
We did.
What was there?
Did you not get any?
No, I was gone, and I tried to make it back, and I ended up not making it.
Oh.
I had to drive out to Prosser to pick up Avery. It's a long story.
That is a long ways to go.
It was a long ways to go, yeah. If your kid's going to get sick at camp, you'd like them to be like 5 minutes
not
away,
Prosser.
Not 45 minutes away. Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Shugs.
I went with an Oreo cookie cone.
Ooh.
I think I'm the only one here that went cone.
What?
Everyone,
they have a good sugar cone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Let's go there every time.
Okay. I guess everyone was going for it because you could do toppings. I think people went with the dish. So
they wanted more of
toppings.
A sundae.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I went, did vanilla, and then she talked me into trying guava as well, which was fantastic.
Guava sounds pretty good.
But their vanilla is pretty famous, so I had to go with it. I love vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
You don't.
What kind of toppings do they have? Do they have
homemade caramel, salted caramel, and chocolate sauce, okay, and whipped cream,
and sprinkles? You know, the classics.
Yeah. More. Did you grow up calling those Jimmies also, like the chocolate sprinkles?
No.
It's a Boston weird, like Massachusetts Boston thing. Is that chocolate sprinkles are only called Jimmies? And
what's that come from?
No idea. And there was some speculation that it was racist. It does not seem to be. I've done some research on it in order to find out whether or not that was the case. But they're, I don't know, that's just what they've always, I didn't know they were called anything else until I moved to California when I was 18.
Weird.
And was like, yeah, I'll take a, you know, whatever cone and can you put Jimmy's on it? The person's like, the heck are you talking about? I was like, you know, those right there. What do you mean? I had no clue that that was not
maybe it's because that wasn't my choice as a kid. Oh. I always wanted the vanilla ice cream, soft serve cone dipped in the chocolate and then it, you know, hardens and you.
Oh, like a Dairy Queen hardening. Yeah, that's
that
pretty good. They didn't have that yesterday, did they?
No.
There's a new place that does that on 45th. They have like this Hokkaido milk ice cream soft serve. It's sort of by like 45th in Wallingford. I don't remember the name of the place. Japanese place right there. It's awesome.
Sounds fantastic.
It's really, really good. Yum. And there's usually a line like around the corner. Remember the line that used to be at Molly Moon's? It's moved over to this place, and now you can walk into Molly Moon's or Fainting Goat without a problem.
New hotness.
All right. Let's see. Bunch of things going on today. Maura, I got a question for you.
Yes.
When are you singing today?
Somebody didn't forget.
9 o'clock? 9? Can we agree 9 o'clock is singing time?
All right.
9 o'clock. That was easier than I thought it was going to be.
Me too.
Maura will sing at 9 o'clock today. Looking forward to that. And up next, we'll talk to Joe Fan, who made some pretty strong declarations in the last few days. We'll challenge him on them next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
All right, this hour, driven by Wastecar Ford, Joe Fan joins me every week at this time. Good morning, Joe.
Mike, how are you, sir?
Loved your column this morning, or yesterday, rather, at seattlesports.com. I read it this morning. Really enjoyed it and thought you made some great points. You used a couple of words that I found interesting in talking about Julio, and I was curious if you would expand upon them both. The first was legendary. I guess that was in your tweet about it, but you said it was a legendary performance last night. I love that word. Why did you choose it?
Because there is just such a mystique about Julio that we've seen for 91 games. And I think the diehard baseball fan has gotten to see. But we know how much of a regional sport baseball is. But now all of a sudden, Julio Rodriguez is the talk of the All-Star break. And to step up and bat leadoff in this home run derby where Corey Seager's against him, Dodgers fans are giving Corey love, no one really knows what to expect from the kid, and he goes up and pounds 32 bombs over the fence, some of them just prolific blasts, and then to do it again. I mean, he had 81 home runs. Juan Soto had 53. There's just no doubt in anyone's mind walking away from that event who the story of the night was, and it was Julio. And for a 21-year-old to step up and do that with, you know, the hype, the excitement, the crowd, whatever, he's just built for every moment. And that is just, it's incredible. And he does it with a smile on his face. And it's just one of those derby performances that will go down in the books that people will always remember.
Yeah, I think that's true. Certainly people here in Seattle. I mean, it was appointment viewing last night. The other word I loved that you used for him is comprehensive, a comprehensive talent. I think that's another pretty interesting and very descriptive word for Julio.
Yeah, and it is, because it's everything on the field. Certainly the way he patrols center field, the bat, the clutch factor, the eye for the strike zone, the speed, certainly. But then the swag. And I know, you know, people kind of get frustrated when they see the Griffey and Julio comps, you know, personality-wise, charisma-wise. But it's impossible to miss it. I mean, that is, you know, you look around the league at all these cool players and you think, oh, man, Ronald Acuna, that guy's sick. I want one. Oh, man, Fernando Tatis, that guy's sick. I want one. Oh, Francisco Lindor, you know, years ago with Cleveland, gosh, this guy's so sick. I want one. Well, I mean, Julio Rodriguez is A1. I mean, he's exactly that. He is face of baseball type of guy. And so it is. It's top to bottom. Everything is top shelf. And it's pretty incredible to watch, again, for just a 21-year-old to be handling it like this. And I've got some friends in the organization, and I texted some of them, and it's like, hey, I hope he's as good of a kid as he seems, because he just seems like the best and most genuine person, mm-hmm. which is why it feels like his teammates love him as a leader, you know, of a team that is expected to, you know, expects themselves to make the playoffs. And they responded, great kid, all caps. And so it's pretty cool, man. It's hard not to kind of get the warm and fuzzies when thinking about him playing in a Seattle Mariners jersey for a long time.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up his teammates, and obviously you're right. They do love him, and he does have a leadership factor already. I found myself thinking about them and how odd it must be to watch this kid who's 21 years old. Remember, the Major League Baseball draft is going on, and there are going to be plenty of guys drafted that are older than Julio, which is just ridiculous to think about. And he's already at this state. He's already doing everything he's doing in the major leagues. And how interesting it must be to be a veteran watching that happen, where you're sort of being asked to counsel him, to lead him, to help guide him into the big leagues. But at the same time, you're like, this kid's got so much more talent than me, and he's already better than me. What an oddity that must be.
I'm guessing a lot of them forget that he's 21. You know, going throughout this season, it's just Julio doing what Julio does. He's our leader. This is who he is. And it's like kind of a pinch yourself moment, like, oh, yeah, this guy is 21 years old. And it is just neat. It's cool to see Ty France there with him at the timeouts or after each round, bringing the Gatorade along with Vladdy Jr. And then, you know, we've got Paul Sewald and others on Twitter. Steph Curry's giving him a shout-out. Donovan Mitchell's giving him a shout-out. This guy is – there's just not many baseball players, again, given how regional the sport is, that have sort of a rock star vibe to it, Hollywood vibe to it. So it's fitting this All-Star game, his debut is in Los Angeles, but he's all of that and more.
There's like almost like a, you know, when you've got a boy band and like the youngest member becomes the breakout star and everyone else is just like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's sort of the direction this is going to go. You also mentioned something in your column yesterday, and you just sort of stated it almost as a statement of fact and just sort of glossed over it. And I think it's worth, you know, at least to asking, is this definitely true? You said Julio is now, with Russell gone, the face of Seattle sports. Has that just happened instantly?
It has happened instantly. I think the table was set for it to happen, you know, the second Russell was traded, and you think, okay, who is capable of taking on that mantle? And you could say DK. There are probably a couple others, but oh, this 21-year-old phenom who, you know, Seattle sports fans have been waiting years to see this guy. As I mentioned in the story, this white knight of the franchise, where for Mariners fans, it's been all about the farm system for 3 years, really since they blew it up and Jerry made the decision to go full rebuild. He has been the face of it. And so I think everyone was hoping it would be him. And then, yeah, through 91 games, it's just, it couldn't be more obvious that it is him. And we'll again, hopefully be him for a long time with, you know, one of these epic mega deals that should be coming down the line, you hope, sooner rather than later.
You want Juan Soto?
I do, yeah. You know, I get the, you know, that's the double-edged sword of having the homegrown prospects is, well, you don't want to trade away the next Julio. Well, there's, you know, think about how many prospects don't make it. And I understand that you build up your farm system. You don't want to deplete it in one fell swoop. But getting Juan Soto paired with Julio Rodriguez for three pennant races, to me, is too good of an opportunity to pass up. And certainly there's a price that the Nats ask for. And you say, that's too rich for our blood. We're going to move on. But you have to make the call. Any GM who's out of a team that has World Series aspirations this year, 2023 to 2024, has to pick up the phone and call.
How much would you be?
I mean, where are you at? What's your take?
Well, to me, the question, the biggest question is, what do they ask for off the major league roster? And if that answer is nothing, then I'm really interested. And that's not to say I'm not willing to give up big time. I am. I mean, I'm willing to talk about Kelnick and Marte and Harry Ford and, you know, Hancock, et cetera. I mean, like, yeah, let's talk about all those big names. I got no problems with that. When you start talking about Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, I get a little squirrely because I don't know that you can mess up what you've got going, especially with this pitching staff. You need more pitching already, and the idea of sacrificing anything off your current starting staff makes me real squeamish.
I think that's really fair, and it obviously would be painful. And you know he's going to go to free agency, and that's just how it's going to work. But you know what? It's just hard not to think about watching Julio and Juan Soto in the outfield every single day. And, you know, it's just sort of a mesmerizing kind of daydream. And we'll see. But I would like for them to – I would like to just be assured that Jerry's at least on the phone inquiring what the price tag would be.
Yeah, and I got to know a little bit more about Soto's personality, et cetera. I want to know, you know, what does that look like with two players of that stature in a clubhouse together? Can they fit together? Do they form a clique together? Like, what does all of that look like? I just don't know enough about the guy. But certainly from a talent perspective, pairing those two kids at their ages with their ability – I mean, as good as Julio was last night, let's be clear, you know, it was Soto who won the whole thing. And if he's not the best player in baseball right now, he's sure in the conversation.
Yeah, I think there's sort of among fans on Twitter in the conversation, I think there is sort of an understating of how good Juan Soto is.
He's ridiculous.
Oh, he's hitting 250. He's got, what, 18 or 19 homers to break, whatever. Like, just not worry, you know. And it's like, I don't think people really understand and appreciate how good he is. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's a big conversation, but it's a conversation that should be had with Jerry and his team.
Joe, great stuff. As always, really love the piece this week. That was every Monday and Thursday. You can read Joe at SeattleSports.com. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks. I think we're doing midseason awards on Thursday. So more to
nice.
Come.
Nice. Awesome. There you go. All right. Midseason awards coming Thursday from Joe. And he does great stuff. Really, really glad and excited that he's part of our team here. SeattleSports.com. Yeah, Joe's with us every Tuesday at 8 o'clock, Wednesdays at 6:30 as well. He's doing awards. Now, we were kind of talking about doing awards. In fact, we've kind of got some prepped. We're going to go through a few at 8 o'clock today, maybe
so
a few more
like,
tomorrow.
I'll do mine before yours,
yeah.
Joe.
Yeah, don't you think? I mean, I don't want to be accused of plagiarizing Joe's awards. Plus, his will be better. So, you want to make sure. Ours will be like sort of an amuse-bouche before his, right? Like a little mini appetizer or something like that.
Amuse-bouche?
Yeah.
Never heard that word.
Well, go never watch the first season of Friends. That's where I learned it. Probably where most other people did.
It's not funny, so that's hard for me to
sit
through.
Oh, poor Justin. He's too young to understand Friends. I mean, it's not funny. The first few seasons were funny.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been on so many times in the background. I'm like, I don't get how people sit through this show.
I mean, the first few seasons were funny. By the end, like most shows that go, you know, close to a decade, it had run its course, obviously, but the beginning was pretty funny.
Okay. It's hard to know which ones are first because it's like so many years of it. I can't tell when the show began. Were there different characters? Did people get introduced later?
Really.
Has it been the same cast the whole time?
It was mostly the same cast, but, okay. You know, it was just, you know, early instead of late. The characters hadn't been overexposed at that point. Whatever. I don't care. let me talk through some of this stuff from Rob Manfred. So Commissioner Baseball, not a great commissioner, right? Can we all agree? I mean, nobody likes Rob Manfred.
Yes.
There aren't a lot of commissioners that are well-liked, but with some, you can kind of go through, like, their and weigh the positives and negatives. Like, I have a lot of issues with Roger Goodell and the way he's handled discipline and some things like that with the league. But obviously, the growth that the NFL has had under Roger Goodell, his marketing ability, like, there's some real strength to what Goodell does. Uh-huh. Even if I don't like him, and there's some things that I specifically have an issue with. Gary Bettman's the Antichrist, and then you can, I mean, not really, but close. and then, you know, Adam Silver actually seems to be the most liked, right?
Yeah.
Which is funny, considering how disliked David Stern was, especially here in Seattle. But Rob Manfred is not, he feels like just a business executive who's been put in charge of baseball.
How does he compare to Bud Selig? Was that reputation similar?
No, I think Bud was despised for some other reasons. I mean, you know, he presided over the steroid era, and, you know, there are some major issues with Bud. My thing about Bud Selig is that he essentially used steroids, not himself, but in the league, to bring baseball back from the strike, and then all of a sudden feigned, like, shock that there were steroids in the game. He wasn't complaining when a roided up McGuire and Sosa were, you know, chasing each other down in 1998 and money was
TV
pouring into the sport.
Yeah, right.
He also bet big on Boston and New York. And while it worked during that time, I think it was to the long-term detriment of the sport. I think when you think about the way these commissioners have structured their league marketing-wise, right? I mean, David Stern, say what you want about him, he made the declaration essentially that the NBA was going to be about its stars. They were going to market its stars more than its teams, right? And so those stars became what you cared about in the NBA. In the NFL, they've essentially marketed the event every single week and the competition between all of the teams and the, you know, the salary cap and what that does for sort of, you know, the cyclical nature of any given Sunday. Baseball when they were under Bud Selig, I think really went after, hey, big markets, right? The Yankees and Red Sox formed the Yes Network and NESN, and they brought in a lot of money due to passionate fans and a large fan base, et cetera. And they built, you know, it was essentially like the Cold War, right? Like it was like an arms race between a couple of teams that were spending an oodles and oodles of money. And everybody else kind of got to sit around and watch, right? And it was great for ratings at the beginning, and Fox had huge ratings in 03, 04, and that whole time it really blew up. But the byproduct of that is that I think fans in maybe not quite 28 cities, but somewhere close to that, were turned off by the whole thing and don't want to see the Red Sox and Yankees every single week. And now two of the marquee franchises have become so disliked and overexposed that I think baseball fans don't know exactly what to latch onto. In the meantime, the league has done a horrendous job of marketing its stars and changing its culture to try to make guys more open and available and all of these things. And then you throw in the last few years, the shift, the analytics, and all of the things they've done to the way the game is played, not to the way the game is won. I always want to clarify that. If you want to win baseball games, you better use analytics. And you better be better at it than somebody else. But that does not make the product more fun to watch. And so all of these things have sort of combined to put baseball where it is right now. I don't think it's in the worst spot. I think people exaggerate, right, baseball's demise. But it's obviously not in its best spot. And I think some of that is due to Rob Manfred, and some of it is due to Bud Selig and sort of the after effect of what he accomplished during his time.
Yeah, Rob Manfred is not doing himself any favors, is what you're also saying here.
No, he's not. Anyway, he spoke yesterday, and I want to play you a couple of cuts. I don't know whether these will mean anything to you, but the first is here on the Mariners.
We sell competition. I mean, it's really, it's that simple at the end of the day. I think for me, people say, you know, what are you excited about in the first half? You know, my answer is Seattle and Baltimore. I mean, it's great. It's awesome. You know, I just think with the additional playoff teams, you're going to see September baseball in more markets that's meaningful, and that's the best product we have to sell.
So kind of interesting, right? So he's now trying to sell competition, right? Think about what the NFL talks about all the time, any given Sunday and all the teams, sort of the cyclical nature of the NFL. Baltimore and Seattle are starting or on a great run right now, and Rob Manfred's going to point at that forever. He's not pointing at the fact that the Yankees are practically on pace to set an all-time record for wins, right? No, he's not pointing at that. He's pointing at, you know, two teams that haven't been there in a while, and are not spending a tremendous amount of money and saying, hey, look at them, look what they're up to and look what they're capable of. You know, it's nice to be noticed, right? I mean, if you're a Seattle fan, it's nice to be noticed. It's nice to know the commissioner knows who you are. Maybe he'll remember that when he does the scheduling next year and doesn't force you to fly 3,000 miles to D.C. to play a doubleheader only to turn back around and go to Texas.
I'm sure he's the one mapping out that entire schedule.
You don't think that's part of his job? You don't think he does
think
it
he
with
has
like a
people that do that.
I think he's got a big like a big cork board in his office, and he's designing the schedule.
It's like the evil Pink Panther petting the cat.
When I think of that, though, all I think of is Inspector Gadget for whatever reason. Anyway, so yeah, all right. I'm glad to know that he's taken notice, and I'm sure that, you know, he's got some ulterior motives for mentioning that. And it part of that may be that he knew he was about to, I don't know, was that interview before the game or after the game yesterday?
That was before. Okay. So I think it was with MLB radio. The question was also about the extra playoff game. So hopefully the Mariners don't need to be in that extra
darn
playoff
right
game.
He was probably also aware of the fact that he was about to be sitting in a suite with John Stanton for the night based on the fact
yeah,
that the game
also, I was gonna
is going to be in Seattle next year.
Convenient that this is next year.
Right,
Seattle.
Exactly. You know what I like is Seattle. There's John
city.
Stanton. Here's a little bit more.
I think I'll take the two finalists last night. I mean, I think Julio Rodriguez just, you know, burst on the scene last night. And, you know, look, Juan Soto, people forget how young he is. You know, I mean, he's just a great, great young player, so there's two good ones.
All right, so first of all, awesome. Did he get, what did he say? Did he say Julio? I was a little confused as to whether that, what
I think I'll take the two finalists last night. I mean, I think Julio Rodriguez.
Okay, he just sort of laughed through it. All right, so he does know his name. That was good to hear. He burst onto the scene. Maybe the first time Rob's actually seen him. What how many baseball games do you think Rob Manfred gets to watch?
Funny, I was going to ask you the same question. I was like, how close does he pay attention to the day-to-day games?
You know, I don't know the answer to it. It's a great question. I asked it myself. but I would love to know the answer. I would. I'd love to know how many games he gets to see. When I was the program director here, I went to a couple of conferences of things with other program directors from radio stations around the country, and the most common frustration of program directors is that they don't get to listen to their radio station enough.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, it just, they're constantly like, everyone else at the station gets to hear more of the station than them because you're pulled into meetings and you've got to do this and that, and everybody wants a little bit of your time doing something other than just flat out listening to the station. And I wonder whether the same is true in being a commissioner. Like, how much baseball does he actually get to watch? I'm sure, you know, he goes to the suites. Ryan, he probably goes around the league, and at some point he's in many of the ballparks talking to the owners. He sits in a suite. How much time does he get to spend watching versus talking and schmoozing and deal-making, et cetera? I wonder how much baseball he gets to watch.
It's really, really interesting to think about that, because in football, it's different. He can only play one. It's all on Sunday. It's 3 days a week.
Right.
These are all every different time zone, several games a day.
Yeah.
Does he just watch the Sunday night baseball? Does he just watch?
Has he seen Julio play before?
I was going to say, did he watch the home run derby?
I'm sure he watched the home run derby. He was probably there for that. But, like, do you think he's seen Julio play a game of baseball before?
In person?
Definitely not in person. And that I understand. But has he watched it on TV? Does somebody create for him, like, a little supercut of every? That's what I would do. If I was Rob Manfred.
Do you think he at least watches highlights?
That's what I mean. Like, if I was Rob Manfred, I would want somebody to create, like, a super cut of highlights for every day. Show me what happened. I got 10 minutes, 15 minutes every day. Give me everything that happened in baseball as quickly as possible. Right? I mean, like, he's got to have some sort of a clip service or something.
And give me a way to make it seem like we don't underpay minor leaguers, even though we obviously do.
That's a whole nother thing. That was another one he got into yesterday. And they just settled that lawsuit. We can ask Jeff Passan about that at 7:30. Rob Manfred also asked about potential changes to the game.
The competition committee has spent a lot of time already on the pitch clock, the larger bases, and the shift. And I expect that those issues will be dealt with for the 23 season. ABS, I see, and I said this carefully once, I'm going to say it carefully again. It's a 24 or beyond issue, and it's not up or down. I mean, there's two versions of the automated system that are out there, the challenge version and what we refer to as the full version. We have work to do on both of those. We're going to continue to experiment with them in the minor leagues, and ultimately the competition committee is going to have to make a decision as to whether they want to do it and which form they prefer.
So that's some changes for baseball coming as soon as next year, right? Pitch clock and bigger bases and changing the shift. I'm all for the bigger bases and the shift change. I'm 100% in favor. I put guys on either side of second base, try to bring back more just, you know, flat out hitting, more singles, more doubles, more, you know, just more men on base. Like, I'm all in on that. The larger bases, I think, is a good idea. It's safer, and maybe it'll make stealing bases a little bit easier, in which case you'll bring a little bit more speed into the game, and some of those guys will become more valuable. I'm all for those two. I don't really need a pitch clock. I don't need it. I really don't. I know that there are some people that love the idea, A, because it makes the game faster, and B, because it brings another element and another challenge into it. I don't need it.
Yeah,
I really don't.
I go back and forth on it too.
I don't need a clock in baseball. Put two guys on either side of second base because the shift is frustrating and it has altered the way the game has been played. I don't think you need a pitch clock every time. What you need is umpires to tell guys to move it along.
Right.
And tell the batters they got to stick around the box.
True. I was like, I think that can be policed better than actually doing
it.
Yeah,
just police it. For God's sakes, you don't need an actual clock. It's baseball.
There's a really good article on The Athletic that Jason Stark did about the shift too, and the piece of pie that goes behind second base, so how far back you can be before that line which makes perfect sense. Because I didn't know how they were going to do that either. I was like, is it a straight line behind second base?
They got to do all that stuff, man. I just, that would open the game up and make it closer to the game that I think many of us
grew
up with.
I'm with you on the clock, though.
All right. Coming up next, Juan Soto is the conversation, but how real is it? And is there an additional fear that I thought of last night in thinking about Juan Soto? We'll get to it next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.